Give a little time for the child within you. Don't be afraid to be young and free. Undo the locks and throw away the keys. And take off your shoes and socks and run you. La, 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 la.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Who Is My Doctor?
Who is my doctor?
Who is indeed? I'm your host, Zach, and I know a lot about Doctor Who.
And I'm also your host, Cassie. And did you know that the last passenger pigeon in existence was named Martha?
Why did you say that name?
Not only a talking dog and a former doctor companion, also a dead passenger pigeon.
Today we're going to be looking at Series 5, Episodes 8 and 9, The Hungry Earth and Cold Blood.
Nom 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 nom.
Nom 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 nom. Hungry, hungry earth.
How? How?
And today you're going to be meeting another modern version of a classic Doctor Who alien.
Oh.
You're going to be meeting the Silurians.
Insert applause. I don't know. Sure.
I didn't know if you had a reaction to the name of Silurians.
Ooh.
So these Silurians, are not technically aliens. They are the species that owned the Earth before humans did.
Okay.
before I just start gauging your thoughts, we're going to do the Profassi first this time, because I am curious. What do you think a Silurian might look like?
It's so comforting now hearing Jesse in the background of my brain being like, Zach, that's an unfair question. How should she know?
She shouldn't know. That's the fun of the game.
That's so mean. That's brain Jesse talking, not me. I think that this is a completely fair question.
I mean, the good news is the next Profassi is I'm going to ask you what happens at minute 12 of this episode. So
fuck you. Silurians. How do you spell it?
S-I-L.
Hold on. I'm not that fast. And I'm dyslexic. S-I-L.
U-R-I.
U-R-I.
A-N-S.
All right. I was hoping that seeing how it's spelled would be like, oh, well, the root word is actually Latin for... But I don't know.
When I tell you that they ruled the Earth before humans did... Does that sort of spark any idea of what they might look like?
Either chimps or lizards.
Chimps or lizards? You want to take a guess on one of those?
Am I correct?
I'm not going to tell you.
Could you tell me with your eyes? That's not helpful. This is an audio podcast, Zach. Get it together. Well, because like before humans or before... The fish that crawled out of the water and
before humans.
OK,
like they are from Earth. They are not aliens.
They are from Earth.
Yeah, they were. Okay. They were the species that ruled Earth before humans did.
So like dinosaur.
OK,
maybe.
Dinosaur-y. No.
Well, because like I'm really trying to like jump back into my like history of Earth class. Mm-hmm. And there is that one little like fishy guy that went, hey, I can crawl on the grass right here by the ocean. There's immediately grass.
Mm-hmm.
Like a mud skipper, they kind of look like. They're freaky. But so in my head, I'm like, oh, there's a non-zero chance that this could be some kind of aquatic race.
Okay, like an amphibian.
Like I'm really thinking either like amphibian. I have one of three. So it is either like a reptilian, like a lizard,
mm-hmm.
cold blooded, like, you know, if dinosaurs.
I mean, the second episode is called Cold Blood.
So there's the reptilian angle. There is the amphibian, because amphibians can be cold blooded. Like you should keep them warm.
Yeah.
but wet is the biggest thing for amphibians. Mm-hmm. Or it is more like, what if there was a different type of like ape or monkey that evolved into that one feels less likely because we're dealing with wacky wily logic. So I am leaning more towards fish or amphibian.
Or did, I mean, amphibian or lizard, you mean?
I suppose, yes.
Okay. Just because you like hadn't said fish,
amphibian. Well, because I said fish at first and then you auto-corrected to amphibian. So
okay.
In my head, it's still fish.
Gotcha.
But you made it amphibian, so.
Fair. Sorry, I was just trying to make sure. I'm also just trying to be clear what you mean. So I'm
well, not yeah, no, you're putting words in my mouth. That's fine.
Sorry, I'm not trying to do that.
Yes, you are. So, yeah. So it's either some kind of water or like water creature, fish, amphibian, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Or it is an offshoot of a, like, reptilian.
Okay. So, as I said, they were also a classic monster or classic Doctor Who.
I'm also trying because, like, bear in mind, another one of my favorite shows is Land of the Lost.
Mm-hmm.
So in my head, I'm like, oh, like a Sleeslack.
What's a Sleeslack? I've not seen Land of the Lost. So.
You haven't seen Land of the Lost?
I'm sorry. It's a blind spot for me.
Are you kidding? I have it on DVD, dude.
And we've never sat down to watch it.
I thought you had already seen it. Look it up.
All right, I'll look it up a Sleeslack.
Look up a Sleeslack. And you listeners at home, also look up a Sleeslack. And know that when I was a child and my speech impediment was work, I would say it as a Sleeslack.
According to Google, it's a Sleestack. I don't know if that...
That's just me misremembering it.
Gotcha. These are fun. These are very like
it fits in the realm though of that, like you can get the vibe.
Yeah, for sure. And so that's kind of what I was getting at is like, because it's also around the 70s that you'd be seeing the Silmarillions.
As is
Land of the Lost. So think, so when you're trying to think about it, what do you think? Land of the
Lost is better, but that's just my opinion.
What do you think a 1970s alien being translated into modern day? Well, alien is obviously a pejorative, but a 1970s creature being translated into modern day. What do you think that might lean into of your choices so far?
God, Sleestack are so scary. It look like this. It look like a Sleestack.
Sleestacks are interesting because they do seem to have mostly lizard features, but then very like almost frog-like eyes looking at them here.
I think that's why my brain is like, oh, it has to be that. But I'm like, that is a different show. Not only is it a different show, it is an American show. Which, like, not for nothing. And it is something that I have to constantly remind myself that there is a lot of lore, like Americana lore, that I don't know how pervasive that is worldwide.
Mm-hmm.
So something like a, you know, subterranean, they live in Death Valley lizard person.
Mm-hmm.
Something like that where it's like, I don't know that the UK has something like that. Or if they do, it would look wildly different. Or maybe it doesn't. I don't know. I don't know about worldwide cryptids. And now I have homework that I need to do. The only one that I've been able to learn about is the Nutman.
Which is just a fairy.
Thank you, Karina.
Thank you, Droffy. Karina Droffy.
Nutman.
In fact, if you want to take it a step further, I will let you say Sleestack because it has this like I'll just take Sleestack as an answer if you want to go with that.
Well, because Sleestack are more lizard people. Mm-hmm. I will out myself a little bit with that and say they are like dinosaur kin. They are like the dinosaurs, human sonas.
Mm-hmm.
But because that is the only thing, my answer for Silurian will be, in fact, Sleestack.
Okay, so I'll take Sleestack especially because that also gives you some realms of like this vibe.
Well, that and I can also argue my point.
Yeah.
If I'm super wrong, but I can find a loophole for me to be super correct.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think that's also a much fairer thing in this case. And also it's much more Cassie for the Cassie Profassi for you to be naming something that from the 70s that you love.
Yeah.
I will tell you, though, that another part of the Silurians is that they have a part of them is venomous. And I will give you some options and you can decide which of these parts of them are venomous. Is it their teeth, their tongues, or their claws?
Claws.
Their claws are venomous?
I think so. If for no other reason than it. I have always been curious in specifically like Dungeons and Dragons, whenever there is a creature that is dealing poison damage by swiping.
Mm-hmm.
That's always felt odd to me, mm-hmm, because I don't associate claws with venom. I associate fangs with venom because of like snakes,
mm-hmm,
or like spit. So tongue, saliva, something like that. And so I think it would be fun to be like, oh, that makes sense. Poison claws is coming from, it was inspired by this thing that is very old, because Doctor Who does predate D&D. So I think that I can comfortably say then claws was my first thought. The other teeth and tongue do make sense.
Mm-hmm.
But I would really love for this to be a self-fulfilling prophecy of this is where Gary Gygax got the idea of poison claws.
Okay.
For monsters.
Okay.
Or even if it wasn't, you know, Papa Gygax, if it was somebody who then was like, oh, hey, yeah, there was this alien in, there was a monster in Doctor Who that dealt poison damage via claws.
The game of telephone brought it down to.
Yes.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yes.
Okay.
Wow, that sure would be nice for me to have closure on this thing that's been bothering me.
All right. So now that we have the idea of the Silurians in mind, what kind of story might you be expecting from an episode called The Hungry Earth?
I don't know.
You don't know?
I don't know, Zach.
Okay.
Well, as if it's Hungry Earth, then that means that, like, something from the depths is awakening.
Okay.
And is looking for...
There's a question. So you think something's coming out of the earth, or do you think something's
going
in? I'm
just saying this as a figurative.
Okay.
That there is some search for fuel or power. There's a hunger.
Hungry.
Because I've also been, I just finished up the sixth installment of the Adventure Zone graphic novel,
mm-hmm,
where the hunger is much more prevalent. So that's also tainting my brain a little bit. But it's some search for fuel, power to take over the world, whatever. It's the same thing. Same shit, different day.
Okay. Well, we will find out together as we watch The Hungry Earth. Today's episode of Who Is My Doctor is brought to you by us, actually. Yeah, this is sort of our first actual ad that we've ever done, but it's to tell you about our brand new Patreon. Patreon.com/WhoIsMyDoctor, where for any amount of money, including at the Just a Little Guy tier of $1 a month, you can get episodes of this podcast a whole week early. And yes, that includes right now. If you go to our new Patreon, you can access our episode on Vincent and the Doctor right now. And if you pledge up to the Big Daddy Dalek tier at $5 a month, you can get a special thanks from me at the end of every episode using any name you like. You submit it, I have to say it every week. As long as it's not something actually offensive, I there is sort of a approval process, but for the most part, it'll be fine as long as you're not a tool. We'll also be running polls on future requests for classic episodes and minisodes. This will help support us to make more content, better content, and help us keep making stupid ads instead of ever having to do real ones. So if you've got $1 and this sounds like a good time, come on down to patreon.com/WhoIsMyDoctor. That's patreon.com/WhoIsMyDoctor. It's literally the name of the podcast. I don't know how to make it easier than that. And we are back from the Hungry Earth.
Mmm.
Mmm, tasty, tasty.
Mmm, humans with all their clothes on.
Delicious Amy Pond.
And they had a kid's size as well.
They had a Happy Meal.
Happy Meal. Thank you.
So what'd you think of The Hungry Earth, Cassie?
It makes me laugh that this is supposed to take in the year 2020.
Yeah.
Which, for lack of a better term, like, they are in a remote part of South Wales. And by the looks of it, it's just this, like, one family.
Yeah, it's one family and then, like, a couple of other workers. They say that drive in.
So, technically speaking, this could very well still be the year 2020.
Yeah, just...
just because everybody is so disparate.
Yeah, so social distancing. The Silurians, though, are really social distancing. They're living under the earth.
It's, to be perfectly frank... it is giving Journey to the Center of the Earth.
Yeah, you're not wrong. You were kind of right in that. And that's also why I give you the point for Sleestak, because especially with their masks on, they look very Sleestak.
Oh, yeah. And I did hit it at one point because I said reptilian.
Mm-hmm.
And they are technically.
They're homo reptilia.
Homo reptilia.
Yeah.
They're gay snakes.
I don't know how much we were prepared for them being kind of hot, though.
One of my biggest gripes with special effects makeup, no matter how much you add to the back of somebody's head, human face proportions will always look like human face proportions, no matter what you're doing to them.
Yeah.
So there's a part of me that's like, yeah, the makeup is phenomenal. It's very good. It still looks like a human under... reptile makeup.
Yeah. I mean, it is interesting to say that this is not how Silurians looked in the 70s.
How did they look?
Let me pull up an image
better?
For you.
Unpopular opinion. I like those ones better.
I mean, actually, no, that's the popular opinion. More people generally seem to like the classic Silurian look.
Well, just because those do look more alien.
Yeah. Now, and in fairness to the show, they do make it clear that the other Silurians still exist. Like, they say that he dealt with an off, like, another branch of the species, because not all humans look exactly the same either.
No.
So they just treat the Silurians as this is a different branch of reptile.
Particularly if you want to boil it down to even color, the classic ones are tan.
Yeah, they're browner.
They do look like they came from a more dry terrain, or, you know, they evolved somewhere that was more desert. And the ones that we're with do look like they come from, frankly, green to me reads more jungle or, like, you know, tropical.
Yeah, because you're wanting to blend in with grass. Yeah,
so, well, not necessarily with grass.
Well, but plant life is really what I mean.
Yeah. Yeah, the classic look more Star Wars. I like them better.
Yeah, also because it's a full, like, rubber suit that they're in, they can get those weirder proportions that you're kind of talking about.
If you're still wanting to have a performer act with their face, it is harder to put them in something like that. Like how I was saying earlier with Chaka, since I'm going to make this about Land of the Lost now. But Chaka has that big, like, brow prosthetic. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of his acting is just moving his eyes around crazy. So if you still want to get, like, depth and range, mm-hmm. you can't really inhibit a lot of the actor's face, which was also part of the reason why, fun fact, in the 2001 Grinch with Jim Carrey, mm-hmm. the reason, or, like, a big reason why they wanted Jim Carrey to do it is because he is so expressive that the amount of makeup that was going on him, they were like, oh, good. A character performer like Jim Carrey will still be able to communicate and express through this mountain of makeup that we're putting on his body. Yeah. And, you know, this is 10 years after that. So makeup got.
At the very least, they're aware that they need to be doing it. And there is something to be said that they do a lot of, like, She's doing a lot of, like, serpentine kind of, like, twitches and motions. Yeah, with her teeth, a lot of teeth going on.
It's that sharp, like,
yeah,
hiss almost.
Yeah. Just while we're speaking about her mouth, I will say you were incorrect. However, it was not claws. It is her tongue. her long lashing tongue that struck Tony in the neck.
Yeah, she can't reload. She doesn't get that skill again.
For 24 hours.
She's got to take a long rest.
She's got to take a long rest. Exactly. Yeah. So there was a D&D vibe there somewhere, I suppose.
I knew it. I knew it.
So you get 1 point for the Profassi for this first episode today.
Cool.
What might you be expecting from Cold Blood coming up on that?
Well, since we know now that there is a whole civilization.
Mm-hmm.
Within the Earth's core, it seems.
Or at least under the Earth's crust, probably not all the way to the core.
Well, because there was lava.
Mm-hmm.
So, which also makes sense if you are a race of cold-blooded beings.
Yeah.
Setting up shop next to a magma field.
It's just a hot rock.
Oh, my God.
The hottest rock.
I love a hot rock. Oh, man.
Oh, God, that rock. So hot.
Oh my God, so flat, so hot,
so smooth.
Hi, yes, I would like a rock, but I'd like to get it hot. Yeah, first impressions. We'll get into more of the specifics, I imagine, in the second half.
Mm-hmm.
Just because I've been trying to take actual notes this time.
Okay,
but.
Well, especially because we also know that in this civilization is Amy being experimented on by...
Oh, my God. Dissected conscious.
Yeah. Yeah. How's that for some imagery?
I mean, it's horrifying. However, I can also say just from my own reading is there were a lot of times like in the early days of exploring the human body that people would be dissected.
Mm-hmm.
Conscious. And some of it was like, oh, the doctors just did not know how to operate and sedate. Other times, like there were forms of medieval torture where you were disemboweled alive because it's torture.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a part of this that's like, ooh, this is barbaric, but also, yeah, like it's all rooted in the same history, I imagine.
Mm-hmm.
It is a curiosity based quest riddled with also like, I didn't want to call it a race war, but it kind of is because it's Homo sapien v Homo reptilia.
Yeah, I mean, there is sort of this like, you're on our home turf and we're here to kick you out because this is our planet from the Homo reptilia.
Because there's a part of me that's like, oh, man, dissection conscious is cruel. But it's also like, yeah, if you absolutely loathe the person that you are holding captive,
mm-hmm.
and want to see them suffer.
Yeah. Especially if you, from the sound of it, a lot of their society has been like gearing up to go to war with humans.
Yeah. And so it's like, oh, yikes. That is a little frightening. But also not like I can't blame them, but. I could also imagine having my home taken away from me and overrun. You know, that's like if our house were to be under siege of an army of ants.
Mm-hmm.
I would hate the ants that took my home away from me.
Yeah, absolutely true.
You know, so it would be like I'm supposed to be stronger than this.
Yeah, it'd be terrible if. You know, some animals came in and just took over our entire house. Anyway, where are our cats? Where are they?
No, she's in her apartment.
Well, let's not dwell on this first episode too much longer. Let's get into the Profassi for episode 2 here for Cold Blood. I will admit that these questions are a little spoilery for this episode. But they were also the only ones I could really think of that had like real answers to them. Because, you know, while we make jokes that my questions are unfair, I do try to come up with questions that I feel like you could at least guess the answer to. So with that in mind, Alea does say that she knows which of the three people in front of her will kill her.
Mm-hmm.
We have Rory, Tony, and Ambrose. Which of those three do you think will kill her?
Ambrose or Tony?
Okay, so not Rory.
I don't think so.
Okay. Because I will say each of them have reason. They took Elliot, Ambrose's son. They also took Amy, and Tony currently has venom running through his blood.
Well, because Tony is Ambrose's father,
So it's also his grandson.
So there's the part too that's like, I could see something happening to him as a result of the poison in his neck. That is that either kills him and Ambrose goes berserk because they've taken away her son and now they've taken away her father, or it's Tony going berserk because he's been poisoned and he's mad at the person who poisoned him.
Fair.
So my guess is on one of them.
Okay.
Because I'm also trying to figure out why he is turning green. If that is just a clear indication of the poison, or if it's like, oh no, you get the poison, you turn into one of them. So I'm like, that's stupid. I hate that. But I'm also like, we are watching Doctor Who, and this show tends to do things that make me specifically angry. I know it's not, it's nobody in the writer's room going, what is going to make Cassie Shima hopping with rage like 10 years from now, 14 years from now.
Speaking of the writer's room, just while you're thinking
about
this,
what will make her angry particularly?
Speaking of the writer's room, just while you're thinking about the answer to this question, this episode is written by Chris Chibnall, who will be the showrunner after Stephen Moffat. So in case you're, he also wrote 42, the episode where the sun possesses you. Burn with me. So if you're wondering where the show goes after Stephen Moffat, he's the one who takes over.
Okay.
So just
wasn't, but okay.
All right. So you've got.
I was angry more at the fact that his name is spelled C H R I S, and then his last name is C H R, but they're not pronounced the same.
Oh,
it's Tris Chibnall.
It's Chris and then C H I. So C.
I don't care, Zach. I don't care. Because I've learned that Chris should be spelled with a K. That's Ambrose.
Ambrose?
Because she had all the weapons. And she
did
gave
have all the weapons.
The doctor a look when he was like, no, no violence.
No, that's fair. That's a totally fair observation.
I think because I've been going back and forth as we're talking and I've been buying myself a little bit of time of which makes sense. And the thing now that makes the most sense to me that I can back up with like actual logic is something happens to Tony. He either passes out or he starts to succumb to the poison in his neck. Ambrose is pissed because her father is dying and her son is missing.
And her husband, too.
And her husband. Damn. Yeah. OK. So, yeah, after much deliberation, I think that Ambrose has the biggest reason to kill.
OK. So,
because her husband, her son, and her father have all become victims of this.
Of the Silurians.
Yes.
All right. All right. So the answer. So Cassie's first prefacy for this episode is that Ambrose is the one that kills Elia.
And I like Ambrose, the name.
It is a good name. And on the subject of death, the Kraken Time makes another appearance in this coming episode.
Kraken Time.
Kraken Time.
Kraken Time. Kraken Time.
Kraken Time, Kraken Time. It's almost time for Kraken Time.
I was trying to do a Step in Time.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one. The Kraken Time appears and
over the rooftop Kraken Time, over the rooftop Kraken Time. never need a rhyme.
Rewrite
over the rooftop Kraken Time.
Rewrite your history, Kraken Time.
Yeah.
So in this episode, one of the members of our cast here gets absorbed into the Kraken Time. We already saw what happened on board the Weeping Angel ship, that you get erased from history when that happens. So who do you think might fall into the Kraken Time this time?
Interesting. Nazreen?
Because
that's sad.
Okay. Like Tony's dying of poison and the woman he finally admits that he has feelings for falls into this Kraken Time. As
like sacrifices herself for the Kraken Time just because she's a brilliant scientist and was very excited to join, to be the companion to the doctor this time.
Yes, but spent all this time like making big holes just to be taken by a big hole herself.
Yeah.
All right.
I just think that kind of sucks. Otherwise, it would be Rory, but also like, no, that's sad. That's like even more sad.
Well, we will find out together as we watch Cold Blood. And we are back from Cold Blood. So how are you feeling, Cassie?
Well, I'm a little angry with myself because I was right. It was much sadder to have Rory fall into the crack.
Yep. After he got shot by a lizard lady, he the crack in time started letting out its little tentacles. And wrapping them up in it.
Little fingies. Because here was my logic. And I feel like it was pretty sound logic.
Mm-hmm.
Where, because I had the feeling that the drill was going to have to be destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
And so my thought was that Nasreem would go, you know what? That's my life's work. I do not want to be remembered as being a failure. Mm-hmm. Even though I know that I'm correct.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to walk or... the crack needs a sacrifice.
I will fall in.
Yes, I will go in. I would rather not be remembered by anybody or anything for something that was an utter disaster and failure.
I mean, you were right to a certain extent because Nasreen did stay behind underground.
Well, yes, that's the thing is her reasoning was still applicable.
Mm-hmm.
Or she went. My life's work was to figure out what lied below the surface. I'm just going to abandon it.
Yeah, now that I know, I'm just going to go home. No.
I am proud of myself for predicting that correctly.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still angry with myself for getting the real answer so utterly wrong.
Yeah, even say, and especially, it's almost one of those where it sucks when you say, like, the thing that does happen where you say Rory could happen, but that would be sad.
That would be extremely sad. And now I'm not panicking, but I'm just like the doctor clocked that Rory had left the engagement ring box in the TARDIS and he found it on the ground while trying to encourage Amy to remember Rory. He lives on in your memories.
Mm-hmm.
And because her feelings for the doctor didn't disappear, something's going to come with that.
Yeah, there's something very well could happen with that.
No, something will happen with that. Something will happen with that, Zach. I know something will happen with that.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the episode, the story of these two episodes itself.
Before we jump into that, I was correct.
Yes, you were correct about Ambrose.
Was killed by Ambrose for all the reasons I said.
Yep, you were exactly right for Ambrose. So you do get one more Professy point for that today.
So now I'm up to 80.
Nice.
80 out of 136.
One of these days I'm going to have to find another one of those like one questions where you can just get a bunch of points and see if you can catch yourself up a little bit more.
Yeah.
But we'll get to that eventually. But for now, let's focus on the story of these two episodes here. What did you think about
the race war, the story?
Yes. What did you think about this dynamic between the Silurians and the humans?
I'm a little torn.
Okay.
Because on the one hand, I do like the fact that there is like an emissary of peace.
Mm-hmm.
And there is somebody that's like, why? Like, let me sit down and hear you out.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like that we do fall into the trope of like you have the wizened like older man that's having to fight against this like fiery spirited. She has like red fire streaks like on her face.
Yeah.
Like there's a part of me that's like, come on. Like I don't want to keep seeing this, particularly now within our current political climate. It does feel, and granted, this is also me watching this episode from a right now context.
Mm-hmm.
With a right now lens, there is a part where it's like, it's deeply unsettling and upsetting to me to have the like coded white man be the like, don't listen to the insurgents. Like, let's just sit down and have a chat. It's just, it feels icky now.
Yeah, there's a part of it where I almost wonder if, because Chris Chibnall's a very, like, progressive person to an extent that he gets a lot of like flack for when he runs the show as being making the show quote unquote woke when the show kind of always is. But he gets flack for that specifically. And I think this is one of those times where he ends up trying to like do interesting things with characters, and they end up accidentally falling into a different trope.
Mm-hmm.
Where, you know, this like stern, tough general type that's like ready to start fights is usually like a gruff male character, but he decided to make the soldiers of this, seemingly all the soldiers in this group were women,
which is cool. Because, like, you do have, like, the Kiyoshi warriors are all women.
Yeah.
And that's cool. Kiyoshi also has the red stripies on her face.
Yeah. And and then there's, you know, this idea of, like, the society clearly is not all women, so we need to put some men somewhere in here. And the pitfall that's accidentally stumbled into is that now you've got these emotional women who are, like, just who can't share anything with anybody until the men show up to like calm them down.
Yes.
Like, I don't think that was on purpose. It doesn't because they never comment on it. It doesn't feel like that was done on purpose, but I feel like maybe they were trying to do some slightly subversive things, and in doing so fell into an entirely different pitfall, if that makes sense.
Yes.
Yeah. And then there's sort of this other awkward part of it where I think in trying to make the two societies clearly reflect one another, the female human is also kind of in this like hyper emotional state where she makes rash decisions.
But here's the part where I'm torn, is that never once did I see anybody making these decisions and saying, oh, that's like, that's illogical. Like, yeah. That's
too much. I would never have made that decision myself.
Cause it's also like Ambrose has every right to be angry.
Yes.
Her father is sick. Her son is missing.
Her husband is missing.
And her husband is, like, seemingly gone.
Yeah.
And so there is a part that's like, yeah, I would also be extremely emotional in that sense, like, in that state. I would also want to get some form of, like, justice. Because it's extremely hard to be the bigger person when everything has been taken from you.
Yeah. Like, the more desperate you become, the more animalistic you become in a way.
And so, like, it makes perfect sense that, yes, in that moment, she wasn't the best of humanity.
Mm-hmm.
And especially when a strange man is telling you, you need to be, like, the light at the end of the tunnel, like, I promise, I will do everything I can to, but up until this point, everything that he has said that he's promised to do is seeming in that moment false.
Yeah.
I'll protect your son. I'll keep my eyes out for him. Fuck Dawn.
Yeah. Like, at the very least, you have not felt safe in his presence in the way that he is trying to make you feel that way. You know, and also just to go back to this gendered point, Nazreen also never acts like unreasonable or like, you know, too emotional like some of the other women do in this episode. And Tony activates the drill again. So it's not, so that's also not just women. Tony is also activating the drill again
because Ambrose specifically is telling him, like, this is going to be the only way.
Yeah, that we can get Elliot back. So I will acknowledge that it is not like it's not fully covered in ick. There is a like, okay, I know, I could see what you were trying to do, and I don't think you meant to do it the way it did. It's just the way the story happened to pan out.
And again, this is also us watching this episode through 2024 lenses.
Yes. But I will say there is something really cathartic to the doctor yelling at someone, you are so much less than the best of humanity right now, because that's a feeling I have right now.
Well, because there is a part of me that was watching this being like, I wonder how this was received in 2010, because right now, me watching it, Nasreen makes a very good point. Humanity would not accept having to share their space with another being, despite the fact that that being was there before them.
Mm-hmm.
Because look at what we do constantly, consistently to the Native Americans. And I'm not saying we, as in those are decisions that you and I are making.
Yeah, but the society. But
despite that, people were, despite people being in a space first, humans have a very nasty habit of not sharing with their own kind.
Yeah, I mean, it's also worth pointing out that is a brown woman saying that in the UK.
Yeah, so.
So, yeah, if someone's going to speak to that idea, yeah.
So, because it got me, this episode was one of the first ones that really did get me to thinking about, like, how this scenario would truly pan out.
Mm-hmm.
Specifically with the, like, yes, if the year was 2020, if a subterranean, like, Earthian alien race emerged from the depths and said, hey, yeah, actually we were fucking here first and we just want to like see the sun again. Like we just want to be out in the surface.
Lizards. We want hot rocks. You have all the hot rocks.
Like we will literally build our societies in your most inhospitable areas.
I did like that all of her recommendations were places like the Nevada desert, the Australian outback, places where lizards live.
Yeah, where I was like, that's actually like super legitimate point that if you did have this alien race that could survive in these inhospitable terrains, like best case scenario, there is that like cross-culturalization of you have new and interesting ways of making energy, mm-hmm. and you know, purifying water, growing things, growing other of your own kind. Like that would be awesome. I would love it if an alien race came out of the ether and was like, hey, by the way, we can improve your world like threefold.
Yeah.
If you would just let us.
Yeah. Like we have new medicines, new forms of energy. Meanwhile, Donald Trump would be like, I'm going to build a floor over the entire world.
We're going to put steel plating all over the ground.
And the Silurians are going to pay for it. They don't have money. They're from under the crust of the earth. Yeah. And so there, you know, there's a part of it where it does feel like, especially for our moment right now, where we are feeling like there are people who are not being the best of humanity.
No.
That we do need like another 1,000 years to cook.
I was like, I don't even know if in 1,000 years people would improve. Like at the rate we're going in 1,000 years, there will be no humans left.
Yeah, the rate we're going in 1,000 years, the planet will be on fire.
The planet will
There'll be so many hot rocks for the Silurians.
Yeah. The planet will be covered in microplastics and unused, unwanted clothing.
Yeah.
So the good news is
Tamagotchis, as far as the eye can see.
Yeah, the good news is the planet will be dressed well.
What did you think about the Silurians in general? Like seeing their, I mean, I know you said you did prefer like the classic 70s look to them, but there is something really nice about this, like. About the way that they've managed to find ways to make them look distinct.
I was just going to say that. My beef usually with any sort of alien race, specifically like the fish people, mm-hmm. is that each fish person looked the same. At least here, they did have a way of making each one look unique. Yeah. Aside from the two women, but they were sisters. So I would expect them to look
even,
the same.
Even then, Rezdak had a scar over her eye.
Rezdak had a scar and she was like red.
Yeah. Or at least had like the red markings on her
face. Yeah. And Alea did not, but like physically they looked
very similar.
The same.
Yeah. I do like that, you know, on the men specifically that like Eldane, I think was his name. You get the like there's like these like ridges over his nose.
Like his coloring was not as vivid, which. Sure. Yeah, he's older.
Yeah.
I would not expect his color to be that vivid, but also the way that his like scales were placed or like his scale markings is they were not like snatched upwards. He was not as cunty as the others.
He didn't have such prominent cheekbones.
Yeah, no, his were more, you know, being pulled down by the forces of gravity.
Yeah.
which makes sense.
Yeah, so there's a part of it that's like, I also...
He had jowls, too.
Yeah.
There has to be a better term for it, but the, like, turkey neck.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, that
the goiter.
It's just, I've never liked the term turkey neck.
Yeah, I'm sure...
Similar to how, like, I learned the other day while I was at work. We were talking about different, like, skin conditions people might have.
Mm-hmm.
And one of my trainers was like, you know, if somebody has like strawberry skin, or I went, what's that? She's like, oh, you know, like it's sometimes you can also call it KP. It's like ketopilarsis, something like that. And I went, oh, yeah, that's much better than my term for it. What I've grown up to know that as. And she was like, what is it? And I went, it's called white girl rash. It's white girl rash bad. Because it's not like it's more common in like lighter, fairer skin, but yeah. It's also just, you know, it's a buildup of gunk and you.
Yeah.
But turkey neck is the term. It's bad, but.
Well, that's the thing is it is interesting how, you know, I do agree that the 70s like full rubber suit look is, there's something about it that's just really.
It's more interesting and more alien.
Yeah, it could be more alien. It's also something, there's also something timeless about it. Like, because we're still doing it and we've been doing it for so long,
yeah.
There's a part of it where it feels like it can kind of go anywhere. Whereas this feels distinctly modern, which isn't necessarily bad.
And the thing with this, too, that I know that I gave it grief in the very beginning,
mm-hmm.
but I understand more. I can make a fairer argument as to why it looked the way that it looked.
Yeah.
Because I said the beef that I have with a lot of these makeups, especially this one, is just that it looks extremely human.
Mm-hmm.
You can still see the human proportions are still there.
Mm-hmm.
And even if you did move the eyes apart or did something to, you know, drop the nose down, drop the mouth down, whatever you did, proportions like that still tend to look human, which is sometimes not what you want.
Yeah.
However, in this particular case, because they were trying to find unity between Homo sapien and Homo reptilia,
mm-hmm. where they need to be very emotive and expressive to get some of their.
There's also the part to be said of, yes, they look very human because in this context, they are.
Yeah.
They're feeling emotions the same way that people do.
Mm-hmm.
They care about their species the same way that people do. If there is some kind of intergalactic threat, because I promise you, if there was something that was threatening the lifestyle of human beings,
mm-hmm.
I do believe that we could all gang together to, at least a large majority would gang up together to say, nope, like, not my planet.
I mean, that's sort of like that's the thesis of Watchmen in a way where, you know, the end of that book is someone creates a giant fake squid alien to unite all of humanity together against this alien cause, because otherwise we're going to keep fighting each other unless we get some other common enemy for all of humanity.
Mm-hmm. But the point that I'm making is keeping them or having them look human does have that, like, you know, you're just like me.
Yeah.
It has that quality then where it's like, why? What makes me better than you when the only thing really differentiating us is the texture of our skin?
Yeah. And so I do want to give huge credit to the makeup artists for them because they all look fantastic.
I am very happy that this time they were all unique.
Yeah, they were all unique. And the only thing about it that felt a little silly, and I pointed out while we were watching it, is that Ayala Alaya had these like thick, luxurious eyelashes on top of her scales. Yeah,
I mean, that's also sometimes like when you're still wanting the eyes to pop,
mm-hmm.
if you have that much stuff going on around you. It's the fact that the eyelashes were still like, they were like falsies eyelashes.
Yeah.
They weren't like, oh, it's like a piece of black, like it's a black scale that just happens to look like this. It's like, no, that's, you got those at Ulta like right before. Like I have those in my kit right now.
Yeah. That was the only thing where I'm like, that's a little silly. Maybe it looked weirder without them. And so they had to put them in Because I could see that being like a there's something about it that's just like uncanny valley when you get them in, when you take those away.
Like I said, though, it's the fact that they were like very determinately like hair.
Yeah, that's the only part where I was like, OK, I don't know. Otherwise, you know, they're very good. They do come back with this design a couple of times. I do. They're a fun idea. The Silurians, this like the race that owned the earth before humans, because they're just something distinctly, because, you know, you were talking about Land of the Lost. It's very that idea.
Mm-hmm.
And it's nice that Doctor Who gets to do that because they're so off. It's so often aliens. And so to have a way of like keeping the aesthetic of aliens, but tackle different subject matter like this.
I like that this duo of episodes was completely earthbound.
Yeah,
because that's kind of been a beef that I've had for a little bit, where it feels like anytime something goes wrong, it's because somebody is trying to take over the planet mm-hmm. for resources, for breeding ground, whatever it is. And this truly was just, we want our home back.
Yeah.
Like, oh, cool. Refreshing almost.
Yeah. So I will say that this is another one of those times where they play with fixed versus flexible points in time. The Doctor talks about how, you know, this moment where the Silurians and the humans meet and can bring the society together will ripple throughout history at this moment. We're not dealing with a fixed point. This is something that can change.
Mm-hmm.
And we see evidence of that because at the beginning of the first story, Amy and Rory come by to wave at themselves. But at the end of the episode, because Rory has been sucked up into the time hole, it's just Amy there waving to herself.
Mm-hmm.
And Amy thinks he sees someone there for a moment, but nope, just Amy.
God, that's so sad.
Right?
It also is just my issue with this fucking... Where every time it's like... Because I do still stand by, like, Amy's choice feels like an episode that would have been better later on.
Mm-hmm.
I understand why it was placed where it was placed. Mm-hmm. I do wish that we could have gotten more time then with Amy and Rory together, seeing them be together. Because even during this episode, Amy disappears in the first act.
Yeah.
She and Rory do not really get to unite until the end, as they are running as fast as they can through this subterranean base.
Yeah. And I mean, there is something very tragic to, you know, these two characters just really reconnected.
These two characters fell
in reconnected. They connected for the first time.
Yeah,
really.
These two characters fell in love again.
Yeah.
And now not only is it like, oh no, Rory died after Amy fell in love with him again, but he's been completely lost.
Yeah, he's been voided.
Which there is a part of me that's like, wow, that is tragic. That is so upsetting. But also, you had brought it up as a point in the very beginning of this series that you liked that Amy was actively running away from something.
Mm-hmm.
Amy isn't running away from anything anymore.
Yeah.
So now there's... I suppose we'll find out eventually.
Do you think Rory comes back?
Because you're asking me, yes.
Okay, because I mean, he was never been born, so it is an interesting.
Well, yeah, but also the Doctor conveniently pulled a piece of shrapnel out of the void, and it was his very own TARDIS.
Yeah, because he had said that the crack in time was being must be caused by an explosion of some kind. And an explosion must have shrapnel, and the shrapnel is the sign off of the TARDIS.
So either the explosion happens during the 1950s and there are other police call boxes, or it is his own call box,
mm-hmm.
because I could see either thing happening.
Yeah, I mean, it very well. That wouldn't feel non-Moffat for that to be a fake out, wouldn't it?
Again, it's one of those things designed to piss me off exclusively. I did have a lot of thoughts and feelings about this episode as we were watching it. But after all was said and done, everything I wrote feels not irrelevant, but it was like there is a much bigger lens
mm-hmm.
or like a much bigger meta context for this story.
Yeah.
That feels more like it's worth talking about than momentarily playing FNAF in real life.
Yeah, I mean, there is something, especially like to Ambrose's idea, like reflecting now, there is something to the idea of someone feeling threatened, but not necessarily like any of her fears being true. Like, because the thing she's afraid of is that her family is all dead, that her father's about to die, her husband's been killed, her son's been killed. None of those things are true. But because Ambrose has accepted them as true, she makes irrational, or not irrational, but she makes emotional decisions based off of that fear rather than listening to this, you know, neutral third party who is trying to broker peace, which is the doctor. There's a moment in it when the doctor's like, okay, everybody, come on down. Come on down here. We're all going to work together. Make sure you bring Aliyah with you. And Ambrose says something to the effect of like, we're done doing what you say. And I'm like, Ambrose, you have not done a single thing he said the entire time. Even like very clear instructions, like get the weapons out of the car. The weapons are still in your car.
Yeah. Which is also like, there was a moment. It was something that Nasreen said at the very beginning where Ambrose was, you know, like, are we going to trust him? And she said, I've seen the impossible today, and the only person to make any sense of it is him. And then points over to the doctor as he like pops up from behind a desk.
Yeah, and is very like silly.
Hello.
Pops up like a wacky inflatable arm flailing tube man.
And so I was like, well, like somebody that Ambrose would inherently trust, like immediately trust the doctor because she has no reason not to.
Yeah.
But then I started to think too of like, we don't know the relationship between Nasreen and Ambrose.
Yeah. And then Rory also makes the point that he trusts the doctor with his life, and it doesn't, not just, none of it seems to penetrate the way Ambrose is feeling, which, you know,
because even still, like any interaction, any positive interaction that happens with the doctor that garners like allyship on his side, mm-hmm, happens basically to everybody but Ambrose.
Yeah.
Because even the doctor and Elliot have a really sweet moment about they're talking about home.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and how Elliot is like, you know, when I'm older, I want to go to a big city. Like, I want to move.
New York City.
York, New City. And the doctor's like, ah, yes, that reminds me of me when I was your age.
Do you miss it? Every day.
And it's just like, you're not going to explain to this child that you are the last of Time Lords, because that would rip his brain to shreds. I think Elliot is game enough that like he could figure it out, and like
he's definitely neurodivergent enough that he could like hop on board eventually.
Oh my god, he's got his like big old headphones and everything, like he's there are signs, but
I mean, he is definitively dyslexic, so if nothing else, that is,
yeah,
some hardline neurodivergence.
Any positive interaction that the doctor has with the people in this party,
mm-hmm,
happens to everybody but Ambrose. I think like what we're getting at is Ambrose is a very unique character, and I think unique in the sense that like very rarely can I find anybody that I can like relate to.
Mm-hmm.
I can relate to Ambrose in all of the bad ways.
Interesting.
Just because I'm thinking like, if I were in that position and I had this man telling me like, you know, you just have to trust me. No, I don't. Everything in my life right now is being taken away from me.
Especially for Ambrose, Matt Smith is visibly younger than she is.
Yes.
Like probably a good 10 years her junior. And everyone is saying, yeah, listen to this guy. He's super smart. And he's like, hello, I'm wearing a bow tie.
Like, no, I can't say that I disagree with her actions.
Yeah.
I did also write at one point that Ambrose deserves to die, but that's different.
Speaking of the doctor talking about, you know, the doctor relaying the information that he is the last of the Time Lords, There is that moment with Ayala where Ayala is insisting she's the last of her species and the doctor knows that she is not.
Yeah, it was the, like,
I'm the last of my species.
No, you're really not. Because I'm the last of my species and I know how it sits in a heart. So don't insult me.
Like, don't make light of my position. And you're like, oh.
Speaking of the doctor being the last of his kind, I did like the celery callback.
Not got any celery, have you? No. No, not really the climate. Tomatoes, sir. You do a roaring trade in those.
Yeah, I specifically remember, I think it's...
The fifth doctor wears celery on his lapel. Yeah, he specifically wears them because they turn purple in the presence of harmful gases. And then he'll eat the celery.
Yeah, I clocked that and I was like... I caught a callback. I got a good callback. There is something to be said, though, of like overall the doctor's unwavering faith in humanity.
Mm-hmm.
Particularly with our 2024 goggles on. The doctor's unwavering faith in humanity is something that I deeply question.
You know, you're not wrong. I mean, because there are parts of it where the doctor... Where the humans are the doctor's favorite pets. And so there is a part of it where he doesn't see what we are. He sees what we can be, which is also a really good frame for, like, that's what the writers do. The writers don't see humans as they are. They do, but they also see humans as they can be and therefore wants the show to help people aspire to be that.
They do and they don't.
Yeah.
Because you do have then, like, a character like Ambrose, where it's like, this is the most realistic representation of a woman in crisis I've ever seen. Because I was also thinking, she doesn't kill Alea with a... She doesn't shoot her.
Yeah.
She doesn't chop her head off.
Yeah.
She tasers her to death.
Yeah.
She specifically... She is doing the equivalent of... Like ushering her to an electric chair, which have you heard any of this is off topic. Any of the documents of like how horrific the first electric chair experience was?
I'm not like intimately familiar with it, but I've heard it's terrible.
Effectively, like how that machine worked is it wasn't enough electricity pulsing through you to just stop your body from working. You were basically cooking from the inside out.
Yeah.
Like, one of the documents says that there was blood pouring out of each pore of this poor, like, man's face. And his eyeballs, like, bulging out of his skull. Like, it's scary. So there's a part of me that's like, Ambrose specifically chose a means of... She chose a slow death for Alea.
Yeah, I'm sure there's a part of her that justified it as like, you can tase someone and it's harmless. I'm just trying to get information from her. Like, it's a very, and like.
But she tasers her three different times.
Like, and tasers her three different times. And it seems like there's an implication that there's more often than that we just don't see.
Because there's also the part that's like, you are dealing with a lizard person who was thrown into an ice box to momentarily put her into a form of hibernation to fucking chill her out, literally. And then she's brought into the, we'll just say it was a cellar. Mm-hmm. I think it was a different crypt. I'm sure you're familiar with the geography of southern Wales. It's pretty...
chilly.
Yeah, it's pretty temperate there year-round. So an underground cellar would still be pretty chilly.
Yeah.
So yes, she is awake and she is active. She's not doing well.
Yeah, no. But to get more of the point of what I was saying was that, you know, the writers are aware that humanity is not the best it can be. That's why characters like Ambrose exist. It's to show you just as much how we are at when we're not our best. But the Doctor is supposed to bring out the best in people through his interactions with them, through the way he wants that, through just believing that they can be.
Well,
almost.
Yes, but the Doctor's also kind of selfish.
Yeah. I do like the way the Doctor interacts with children, especially with Elliot in this episode.
This episode in, or this Matt Smith as Doctor, I think particularly is like, that's how I aspire to be around children, where it's like, I'm not going to, I never, ever like treating children like they are lesser than. They are people too. They are underdeveloped. They are undercooked adults.
Yeah. They're still in process, but they're not they're less cooking. Than. Yeah.
Like they truly are cooking.
Yeah. And so, cause you remember if that's in that second episode where Amy says, oh, so you don't get involved unless there are children crying. They do really want to emphasize like this doctor, especially his relationship with children is like very important. And you really get that vibe here with Elliot, where Elliot says like, I can't write the words down, I'm dyslexic. And the doctor's like, oh, that's okay, I can't make a decent meringue. Just sort of implying like these two things are both like not as important as who you are.
Mm-hmm.
And I really, really like that. There is a real artistry to that line.
Well, because even at the end of the episode, the doctor specifically is not berating Ambrose, but gives her the verbal equivalent of a slap on the wrist and then says, like, you make sure that you make Elliot the best that humanity can be. Mm-hmm. Make him everything that you couldn't be.
Yeah.
And that's just like, yeah, because that, as a parent, that should be your job, is making sure that your child is better than you could have ever been.
Yeah, paying it forward.
Yeah.
Like, not just, like, not literally with money, but paying it forward spiritually, emotionally, maturity-wise.
Like, helping your child to evolve into a better...
Human
being.
Yeah.
I don't see a lot of that happening now.
Yeah.
Particularly since
fucking Gen Z, thanks.
It was specifically at our friend's party. That was part of the ongoing conversation, because there were a couple people that have worked and continue to work with children in like a school setting. And a lot of the stuff that kept on coming up was just not necessarily how rotten the kids are. Kids are rotten now, and especially with easy accessibility to the internet, to TikTok, to whatever, kids are just getting worse. But a bigger issue that's happening now is like passive parenting, because we were also talking about like, well, what's the difference between gentle parenting and like good gentle parenting and bad? And that was the like through thread, is like, there is gentle parenting where there is still discipline and there is still acknowledgement of foul behavior. And then there is passive parenting where it's like, oh, that's just my kid, I can't control them, I don't know what they're doing, I don't know what they're up to. And so there's a part of me that wants to be like, ah, yes, what a wonderful story we just watched of like, there is hope, there is a light at the end of the tunnel. It's these parents now teaching their children to be good and better people, so that way in 1,000 years, perhaps we can have a decent relationship with an alienish species. With the way things are going right now, I'm more scared than I ever have been.
Fair. Well, let's not dwell on the present too much. Let's look to the future a little bit. Now that Rory has sort of disappeared, what sort of...
That means Amy's going to be hot for the doctor and trying to jump his bones.
It
fucking doesn't help that I believe he pocketed the engagement ring just as a means of helping her to remember Rory. And there's going to be some wackadoo shenaniganery where she's like, oh my God, you're proposing. Yes.
We haven't been on a date yet, but sure. What sort of stories do you think might come from this turn of events?
I don't know.
Okay. Is that
I was really hoping after Amy's choice that we were going to get some more developing Amy and Rory's companionship and watch them like fall in love with each other over and over again. We might still get that in some kind of wackadoo twistabout way, but also we as the audience didn't really get any opportunity to see Rory at his finest. So I don't know.
Well, maybe we'll see some of that on the next episode of Who is My Doctor?
Who is my doctor?
Who is indeed? Well, this certainly went better than Jurassic Park. Sure, one guy got sucked into a time hole, but nobody died on the toilet, so I'd consider that an upgrade. Thank you so much for tuning in. We all hope you enjoyed it. If you did, be sure to subscribe and give us a like or 5 stars in all your favorite podcast places. You can find us on Blue Sky, Threads, Twitter, and Instagram at WIMDPod. That's WIMDPOD. And what I said in the ad is 100% true. If you want to get our episode on Vincent and the Doctor right now, be sure to head to patreon.com/whoismydoctor and subscribe for as little as $1 a month. For everybody else, grab your tissues for next Tuesday, because your Tuesdays are now Whose Days.